It's Green and Growing with Ashley Frasca.
Plants, flowers, trees, and stuff.
On 95.5 WSB.
Back on your Saturday morning, Ashley Frasca, Green and Growing. You're listening to 95.5 WSB. And just want to remind you, if you miss any parts of the show, you're able to go back on the website, wsbradio.com/greenandgrowing, and listen on demand to every portion of the show. So that's good news. Always bring you fun topics, great interviews, engaging conversation. So now I want to introduce you to someone new who reached out to me and a great conversation about forestry and sustainability with David Brabham. I have him with me, the Director of Stewardship and Strategy at Georgia Pacific. David, hey, welcome on to Green and Growing.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You know, after our conversation, I want folks to look at maybe 2x4s and packaging, paper towels or stacks of paper plates a little differently, David, because you connect the dots between sustainable forests and the wood and paper products that folks use every day. And it may seem like we see a lot of land clearing going on, and sustainability and replanting, though, stays top of mind for thousands of companies and large property owners across the state. So kind of give us your connection with forestry and the land through what you do with Georgia Pacific.
My role is kind of unique is that I work with our customers and consumers and other groups that care about forests. And then I also look at what good practices are going out there or could be going on out there in the forest and that forest landowners are doing. And then understanding forest science and then building programs to ensure that Georgia Pacific's responsibly sourcing the wood we use to make the products and doing, you know, taking actions that recognize landowners for the good work that they're doing to manage forests responsibly.
And Georgia Pacific is an Atlanta-based company. And yeah, I mean, I really hadn't stopped to think about it until we spoke, David, but things that we use every day, like Brawny, Angel Soft, Quilted Northern, I mean, that's some of y'all's products.
You know, all of those, plus there's a lot of products that you don't necessarily see or think about every day. So from, to your point, toilet paper to 2x4s, the e-commerce boxes that, you know, show up on your doorstep, which seems to be happening, at least for our household, a lot more than you
right.
do. You know, Dixie plates and, you know, even things we don't think about. So chewing gum, perfume, toothpaste, you know, wood and paper fibers are kind of everywhere. And so, you know, I saw a stat a long time ago that each person touches something that has to do with a forest product X number of times a day. And I can't remember the stat, but it was a massive number because it is integrated into everything we do every day.
So we know farmers, we're thinking about, you know, that raise livestock and things. And then you have farmers who have orchards for fruit and things that we eat. But then we have tree farmers, right? Whether they have 5 acres or 40 acres or something. How do you all get in touch with them and then kind of help them manage the land and what they're growing?
It's really interesting because Georgia's unique in that the majority of the forest is owned by tree farmers. And actually, Georgia as a state, 2/3 of the state is covered by forests. So there's a lot of these tree farmers across the state of Georgia that are growing trees. And they grow these trees as a crop, just like maybe like we do in our gardens. They grow trees to harvest and then replant and supply those to our mills, both lumber mills and paper mills and pulp mills across the state of Georgia and across the U.S. Southeast to provide the products that we use. So we work with landowners directly. We also have suppliers that work with the landowners and consultants that work with the landowners that then work with Georgia Pacific to supply wood. So yeah, there's lots of different ways we connect with landowners, but they're really a critical part of the supply chain. And what they do has not only a big impact on the product that we make, but you know, also on the land and on the wildlife and on the plants out there in the ecosystem.
And it spans over the course of generations oftentimes with these families, because as you had to explain to me, I didn't know. I figure you go in or whoever is doing the harvesting just clears everything down all in one fell swoop and then you have to replant. But it's more of a cyclical process for the property owner, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, it's a lot like gardening again. And so, like, if you use the analogy of vegetable gardening in the backyard, you plant radishes, the great example. You put the seeds of radishes down, which frankly, we've had very little success with in our house. We may need to have a follow-up conversation with you on how to get our radishes to grow.
Okay.
You know, if you put the seeds down of radishes, they come up, and you have to thin them. And then when you thin them, you can use those in salads, and then you can thin them again. And then finally, you get the radishes, you pull the radishes, eat the radishes, and then replant radishes the next year. It's very similar to forest management, what these tree farmers are doing. They're basically big gardeners. The plants are just really big, and it takes a longer amount of time. So they'll usually plant the trees, and then they'll grow them for 10 to 15 years, and then they'll thin the trees to make more room for the remaining trees to continue to grow. And then they'll thin them again, usually around age 20 to 25. Same thing, same idea, is to thin them out so the remaining trees have more time to grow. And then the trees usually get harvested, a final harvest around 30 to 40 years for the pine trees in the south. And then it gets replanted again. And what's interesting is during that first thinning and the second thinning, just like those radishes, they get used. So the small trees that get thinned out go into paper products. And then that last harvest where the trees are big gets used for a lot of building products, so plywood and lumber products.
And I'm not looking for a specific number by any means, but how does the landowner, the tree farmer, get compensated? Is it by the weight of the trees that they're harvested, or is it paid per acre?
You're exactly right. So, you know, most of these landowners have 30 to 1,000 acres of forest land, and they'll harvest a section of it each year, and they'll get paid per ton rate. And so it's delivered to a mill that accepts wood, and we weigh the truck as it comes in, and then that weight is how the landowner gets paid.
Okay, thanks for answering that. And you've got a degree in natural resource management, so you've probably dealt with things in the field and worked with some of these landowners. What resources do they have? You know, we will hear from Chuck Lavelle, keyboardist for the Rolling Stones, here in a little bit, my interview with him from 2 or 3 years ago, and he is a tree farmer. But when they have blights, or if they have a major insect infestation, I know there's some beetles that affect some pine trees. What resources do those people have so that they're not alone and they can try to help save their crops?
Yeah, there's lots of great resources across the state, and Georgia is unique in that we do have so much forest and do have a big, large, robust forest industry. So there's lots of resources out there, from consultants to companies to the Georgia Forestry Commission. It's probably a great place to start if you start seeing things that are unusual in your forest. That's probably a great place to get the conversation started.
And we've got friends at the Georgia Forestry Commission, so just throwing out their website because we love those guys, gatrees.org, a great resource for sure. So I'm talking with David Brabham of Georgia Pacific, and we're talking about land management and sustainability as it pertains to tree farmers. And we mentioned insects, David, just now. What are some of the other threats? You said Georgia's, what, two-thirds forests? Are there other threats that people have to keep in mind?
You mentioned one at the top of the show, which is urbanization. You know, I think here in the city, we do see, you know, some forest changes happening. So I think obviously that can be a concern. But, you know, out there in the what we consider the working forest, or where the tree farmers are, across the state of Georgia, there's actually increasing forest area. So there's a good story there. There's also a challenge here closer to home. And then, you know, you mentioned insects, and maybe expanding on that for this audience, because it's something that you've talked about many times on your show, is invasive species.
Right.
And things like Chinese privet and kudzu, all are, you know, invasive species that cause problems in forest and are threats to our forest here in Georgia.
You and I did talk about, you know, clearing land, and it makes us cringe when it's for townhomes or a new neighborhood or something. But in the case of the tree farmer, you know, clearing some land is a good thing because you're kind of out with the old and with the new. How do you all ensure that they stay on a schedule and they know, you know, how many new trees to plant and what kind, so that we have something for the future?
There's a few ways to go about that. First, the landowners here in Georgia are unique in that the majority of them own their land for reasons other than production of timber. Even though they're tree farmers, the USDA does a National Woodland Owner Survey, where they survey landowners about what they care about. And the most noted reason for owning land is wildlife and nature. So they may harvest trees, but that's not their primary reason for owning it. So they have this natural inclination to replant trees because they love their forest. And then, you know, I think on top of that, the economic incentive to grow trees as a crop drives a lot of the replanting. So here in Georgia and for us across the U.S., we're committed to a one-for-one philosophy. So for every one tree we use, one tree is regrown. And so we work with not only the landowners and communities, we work with conservation organizations like the Nature Conservancy, the Longleaf Alliance, other kind of conservation organizations to make sure we can live out that philosophy. But then also working with the harvesting professionals that actually do the work in the forest to make sure they're trained on responsible forest management and educating, you know, these landowners on the importance of what they're doing every day on growing and harvesting and replanting trees.
It is so important, and we so appreciate the work that they do. And David, I really appreciate you reaching out to me. David Brabham, the Director of Stewardship Strategy for Georgia Pacific. Great conversation, and you taught me a lot. I know you taught the listeners a lot, too.
Well, thanks for having me. You know, I love listening to your show. Our household's a big fan of your show, and you know, you always give us a few, your top three things to go do. So we're always anxious to get out there and tackle those after your show wraps up. So thanks for what you're doing for the community.
Thank you, David. And speaking of that, great segue. When we come back, it is the top three things to do in the landscape this weekend. We'll be right back on 95.5 WSB. The weather update brought to you by Finley Roofing.
Green and growing. Ashley Frasca's top three things to do this weekend.
Seeing as it is almost Memorial Day, it's the holiday weekend, a long holiday weekend, which means you may be spending more time outdoors, barbecuing, spending time with family and friends, but maybe getting some stuff done in the garden too, you know? Number one, my friend Julie of Hello Daisy Flower Farm just gave me some dahlia tubers, and I thought it was getting a little late, but no, plant them in full sun and in well-draining soil. Be prepared to stake them as they grow tall. Number two, you can move houseplants outdoors for the summertime, but you want to place those containers in an area that receives partial shade, not direct sun, as they've got to get acclimated. If you place them in full sun too quickly, the leaves are going to get scorched, and that's going to stress the plant. Number three, plant long-blooming perennials like daylilies, Shasta daisies, heuchera or coral bells, and coneflower. Pollinators love them. Ajuga or bugleweed is a good ground cover that flowers and it spreads quickly. You can look for little varieties like chocolate chip. They have the deep purple leaf, also a little bit of green to it as well, and they really do cover kind of a sloped area or a hill really well. And I'll give you number four, because we have time, and it is Memorial Day weekend. I am out enjoying the holiday, but what I want you to do, you've got time before the guests come over. Number four, add red, white, and blue plants to your beds and containers to celebrate the holiday with a little bit of patriotic flair. You can even put miniature flags in the containers. But petunias, calibrachoa, pentas, bee balm, blue salvia, even pineapple sage are all great colors to consider. And speaking of new plants to consider, maybe I'll see you later today. I am working some of my volunteer hours to become a master gardener with the Cherokee County Master Gardeners for their plant sale today. That is going on until noon in Canton. It's at the Senior Center off of Unaveta Road. Again, till noon, they accept cash, they accept credit cards, and that is happening. So you can get more details online if you need them. CherokeeCountyMasterGardeners.com. All right. When we come back, we have half the show left to go. My interview from a few years ago with Chuck Lavelle, a world famous musician, as we're talking about forestry and sustainability and conservation efforts. And then hour number three, some of the best calls I've received from you that are timely and you ask great questions. I and others, maybe experts, also give you great advice. So all of that coming up on Green and Growing. I'm really thankful for you here spending your Saturday morning on 95.5 WSB.
Growing with Ashley Frasca.
Plants, flowers, trees, and stuff.
On 95.5 WSB.
Hope you're enjoying the Memorial Day holiday, kicking it off right by listening to me, Green and Growing, right here on 95.5 WSB. I've got some good stuff for you as I am away today. So talking with Georgia Pacific and the conservation work they do seemed natural to then re-air an interview with Chuck Lavelle of the Rolling Stones, the Allman Brothers Band. I learned when I interviewed him back in early 2020, a conservationist tree farmer, and after studying forestry by correspondence and doing much of the homework while riding a tour bus in the mid-80s, he and his wife, Rose Lane, turned to the family's plantation near Macon, and it is now a textbook tree farm. But how do you introduce a Rolling Stone with Georgia roots, this one here, a tree farmer, a conservationist, and a darn good musician, Chuck Lavelle? Hey, Chuck, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Ashley. Thank you so much. Wonderful to be with you.
Well, you and your wife, Rose Lane, owners of the Charlane Plantation down in Twiggs County, Georgia, and doing a little bit of research there, Chuck, in Middle Georgia. Her family has been in that area for almost three centuries. Is that right?
That is correct, yes. Some of the land goes back to land grants from the king and has been passed through. And, of course, a lot of that has been broken up through the years. But there is some fractions of that that Rose Lane still has. And the actual land that she inherited back in 1981 from her grandmother was a tract that her grandmother and grandfather purchased back in the 1930s. We eventually moved out and started to try to carry on this heritage of stewardship of the land.
And tell me about the character of the plantation, because it seems that the two of you are just so deeply embedded in it, and it in the two of you as well.
Well, when Rose Lane inherited the initial property, which was about 1,000 acres, it was a diversified farm. There was cattle on the place. There was row cropping going on, and there was some timber as well. You know, we certainly wanted to carry on, as I said, a heritage of stewardship, but row cropping and cattle farming, those kind of things seemed to be way too much day-to-day for me if I wanted to follow my musical career. And we started looking into all kind of options. We looked into peach trees, pecan trees, nursery stock, and on and on. But one morning, my brother-in-law, Rose Lane's brother, Alton, said, you know, if you guys are not going to plant this 50-acre field down the way that we normally plant on a crop, you might consider just going ahead and planting trees on it. And boy, a light bulb kind of went off in my head. And the first thing I thought of, Ashley, was the connection of music and wood. You know, where does that marvelous thing that's given me a great career and so much joy come from? And, of course, from the resource of wood, as do most musical instruments. Then the other aspect of it was, this is long term. It's not so much day to day. It's good for the earth, carbon sequestration, wildlife, et cetera, et cetera. So it really fit a lot of the bills that I was looking to personally try to accomplish.
Conservation is so important, but how would you explain that to city folk or someone who's not really aware of what is involved in conservation?
Well, it's a great question. And let's start with the word sustainability, which is perhaps overused these days. But let's examine that word and see what does it really mean in terms of forestry, sustainable forestry. Basically, what it means is you're going to be planting, growing, and managing more trees than you are going to be taking off the landscape. And if we can pause for just a second and think about, well, what else does that resource give us? Mm-hmm. Well, it gives us materials to make books, magazines, newspapers, packaging products. It gives us materials to build our homes and schools and churches and offices, and it gives us home and shelter to all manner of wildlife. We talked a little bit a minute ago about carbon sequestration. It cleans our air. It filters our water that goes into our rivers and streams. So it's hard to think of a natural resource that is more important than trees and forests. So, you know, you want to use these products. You want to have working forests where you can take this wonderful material and make these things out of them. But you also want to make sure, again, that you're doing it in a sustainable fashion so that you're making sure that they will always be there. You know, I actually prefer the term perpetuity to sustainability. Mm-hmm. I want our forest to be perpetual.
Very good. And you are so well respected in the industry as well. The Georgia Forestry Association nominated you in Rose Lane as Tree Farmers of the Year in 1990. You won for the state of Georgia. And then in 1999, the American Tree Farm System selected you guys as National Outstanding Tree Farmers of the Year. So you've definitely done your part and you continue to do so. How did you decide when your brother-in-law had that idea, what trees to grow?
We wanted to do as much indigenous as we could. We have to understand that the landscape throughout the Southeast has changed dramatically since European settlement. And the original tree, the dominant tree from Virginia down to East Texas, was longleaf pine. However, when those forests were cut and the products used and agriculture came into the picture, et cetera, it was found in early stages that longleaf was a really fickle tree to reestablish. It has a very long taproot. It has to be planted very carefully. So the loblolly pine became more in favor, and that's the dominant tree that we see, at least in the pine species across the Southeast now. Of course, let's don't forget the Appalachian areas where you had the wonderful American chestnut tree that was lost to the blight.
Right.
However, the good news there is the American Chestnut Foundation does a wonderful job in trying to reestablish that tree, and the current methodology is breeding a 1/16 Chinese chestnut to a 15/16 American chestnut.
Wow.
And of course the blight came from China, so that 1/16 is giving enough resistance, at least in most cases, to avoid that blight. And so they're doing a great job. I've engaged in reestablishing that. I think I've got about 30 surviving chestnut trees on our place now. But getting back to the longleaf, I'd say about 20, 25 years ago, there began a effort through the Longleaf Alliance and through other private landowners to say, well, let's see if we can bring the longleaf back. And so a lot of the nurseries did great work growing what we now call containerized longleaf. And that is, instead of having a bare root, there is soil around that root. And so it makes it easier to establish and easier to grow. And we've engaged in that. I think we have about 350 acres of longleaf that we've been planting over the last 15 years or so.
Wow. And, you know, we would not be Southerners ourselves if we did not recognize oak trees and magnolia trees and, of course, the southern pines, too. Chuck, give us some of maybe the diseases that folks, everyone can recognize a pine tree, right? A lot of us are beginning gardeners, just getting acquainted with nature. What are some of the diseases or blights that we would need to be able to recognize that could affect our pine trees here in Georgia?
Well, that is a great question. In terms of insects, there are three that concern us. One is the Ips beetle, and that is spelled I-P-S, Ips. And the second is the black gum turpentine beetle. And the third is the most feared southern pine beetle. The Ips and the black gum turpentine beetle tend to only affect a tree or a number of trees in a relatively small area, sort of incidental effects. And this is largely, by the way, caused by drought and climate change. When we have droughts, these insects have an opportunity to proliferate. You know, it's their signal to say, let's go for it. And they start chewing up all these trees. Mm. So the just to reiterate about the southern pine beetle, that guy can devastate a number of acres in a very short period of time. And so the Georgia Forestry Commission does a great job of flyovers with airplanes and helicopters, where they're always looking down to see if they see brown spots. And they can warn a landowner, hey, it looks like you might have an outbreak on your place, and you try to attack it immediately. And really, there's no spray or chemical or anything that can stop these things. But the methodology is, if you do get a southern pine beetle outbreak, you try to cut about a 100-foot area around the infected acreage, and then try to fell all the trees inward into kind of a circle, if you will, and then try to burn them up and try to get rid of them. So these are the things that we look for in pines. Now, as you know, emerald ash borer
Yes.
is a big problem. And boy, oh boy, it's just so sad to see beautiful ash trees go down to that insect. Again, there's no natural enemy that we know of. I know a lot of research stations and universities are trying to see if there might be some predator insect that would help. Unfortunately, at the present, it's just a phase that seems we're just going to have to go through.
And how can you really get to know this well-respected musician, keyboardist, who is part of the Allman Brothers Band and who's still with the Rolling Stones? More of my conversation with Chuck Lavelle up soon on Green and Growing. Stay close. The update on the weekend weather brought to you by Finley Roofing. So when Chuck and I spoke 2 years ago, the Tree Man documentary was just being released, and it's now available as an in-flight selection on Delta flights.
There's three themes, if you will, to the film. One, of course, is the musical career. The other is my career in forestry and the environment. And the third, to me, the most important, is a love story. Rose Lane and I have been married 48 years now, so I wanted that story to come through as well. I just feel blessed to have these interests and to be able to do things with those interests. And we're going to rock and roll. Don't worry about that.
Well, I can't let you go without asking you a tip for beginning gardeners. And this time of year, I've stressed on the show, plant a tree and shrub. This is such an accommodating time of year here in Georgia to do so. Can you give us one or two basic tips of how to successfully plant a tree?
Try to stick with something that is indigenous to your area, to your part of Georgia or wherever you live. The Georgia Forestry Commission has a great nursery, and they have all kinds of trees, not just pines, but they have oaks and dogwoods, ornamentals, and all kinds of trees. Again, I'd love to mention the American Chestnut Foundation. Mm-hmm. ACF is the three-letter initials for it. If you're interested in joining that party, it's a great organization. You know, this is the right time of year to start thinking about planting when the cold weather begins. And you certainly want to try to be done by, say, March or early March, if possible. Make sure that tree is in an area where you can get water to it. Yeah. Or the shrub, whatever it is, periodically, especially the first year or two. To keep it healthy and growing. Mulching is important. Try to mulch around the area to keep other weeds and competition down. And just look after that puppy and have a good time with it.
Great advice. And it's so rewarding for those of us with smaller areas to just have that one tree, and you've really got something to be proud of with the acres there at Charlene Plantation. Okay, a quick rapid fire with you, Chuck, and I know you're itching. It's early on a Saturday morning. You've got a long day's work ahead of you. So first of all, your favorite tree?
Longleaf pine. That was the native tree in our area. I think it's a magnificent tree, and I'm sticking with that.
And the Charlene Plantation there, there's hunting, there's lodging. You and Rose Lane have animals. Your favorite dog?
Oh, we have two German short hair pointers that are our current pets that we love so much. They're both just lovely and very diverse, capable, smart, good retrievers, good companions. So GSP, German short hair pointers.
Politician or president or whomever that you've worked closely with that you would say has a really good record for attention to conservation and sustainability, since that is so important to us.
Absolutely, no question. President Jimmy Carter, great man, great conservationist, incredible intellect, great passion for conservation, for ecology in general, and just a brilliant man.
Yeah. Lastly, I have to ask you your favorite song to play.
Ah, well, that's like picking a favorite child.
I know.
You know, Jessica was a nice instrumental hit with the Allman Brothers Band. It was a great vehicle for a piano player. It gave me a nice spot. I get a lot of comments on the song, and I never get tired of playing it. But the other one that I have to mention, my hero Ray Charles nailed and made famous, and that is Georgia on My Mind.
What an interesting man. Chuck and I could have spoken all day, but I did get an update before I aired this interview and shared it with you again as to what he's up to now. Chuck said they just finished filming their 11th episode of America's Forests right here in Georgia. You can find out more at americasforestswithchucklavelle.com, and that runs on PBS. They've also done segments on the Altamaha River, the Moody Forest, and at Graphic Packaging. And since the end of their whirlwind European tour, of course, with the Rolling Stones. He has been working on the Charlaine Plantation as well as making personal appearances. So much about forestry and sustainability. I appreciate my guest. Hour number three coming up on Green and Growing this Memorial Day Saturday, and your calls next on 95.5 WSB.